KXRNLP Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach, Laguna's only FM, KX93.5. You're listening to Radio Caravan with Scott Hayes and Robert Palmer and reporter Megan Jamerson.
Good morning, Laguna Beach.
Good morning.
You're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Scott Hayes. This is Radio Caravan. I'm here with my co-host,
Robert Palmer.
And Robert, any shout-outs you want to put out there this morning?
Going to give a shout-out to my bride who's off skiing in Deer Valley with Mitt Romney and his boys.
Say again?
They're actually next door. She met the Romneys yesterday.
Well, aren't you special? Listen to that.
Well, I'm not special. I was here working.
Well, very nice. Hey, I want to put a shout-out, by the way, to my Phoenix family. I hope they're listening. Mark and Mimi, Tammy and David. I'll be seeing them mañana in La Mañana, and I'm looking forward to that as well.
Mucho gusto.
Yeah. How come you didn't go on the skiing trip, by the way?
I have to work.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay, cool. Hey, this morning we've got a lot going on. We have, by the way, our first sponsor of Radio Caravan. Robert, you want to sort of talk a little bit about who our sponsor is, who will be coming into the circles, probably starting in about a week or so.
Certainly. Well, we have our Legends of Rock, but we also have our Legends of the Kitchen. And that would be restaurant and chef David Wilhelm, who's been noted for having some of the finest creations in Orange County over the last 30 years.
Right.
He has a new place down in Dana Point called Jimmy's Famous American Tavern, or JFAT. It's casual, it's nice, it's wonderful, it's big, it's comfortable.
Great.
Encourage you to try it out.
Yeah, and that's not the promo, by the way. That's just the announcement that we have a promo. So I want to put that out there as well. Hey, also, we want to mention a few other things. Radio Caravan, starting next Saturday, 8 o'clock, Sunday at noon, Radio Caravan / The Friendship Show will start airing on Cox Channel 3.
What?
Yep, Cox Channel 3.
We're on TV?
On TV, cable, yeah.
Should have dressed up.
Should have dressed up. So that's starting next Saturday, 8 p.m., and Sunday at noon. We'll be running shows every other week, and we've got some great shows coming up, so I hope people tune in for that. Lastly, we've got the Pearl Street Sessions. KX93.5 presents the Pearl Street Sessions, first Thursday of the month. This Thursday is 3rd of April, downstairs at the Wine Gallery, and we have coming in who, Robert?
That'd be Jack Tempchin.
Jack Tempchin, who is an incredible songwriter, who wrote such songs as Peaceful Easy Feeling, The Girl from Yesterday, Already Gone by the Eagles, Smuggler's Blues, You Belong to the City by Glenn Frey. Richard Steckel from the iconic 60s band Honk will be playing with him. And we also have...
There can't be more. Is there more?
We have one of your favorites.
We have my friend Sean Jones coming down. Amazing guitar player, amazing singer. Been in the business for 40 years. Had him on the show a couple weeks ago. Going to be a great evening.
It's going to be a great evening. So I think we're spreading the word, and it looks like it's going to be pretty crowded. So.
I think so. In the Wine Gallery, if you haven't been there, it's a fantastic place. Dozens and dozens of wines by the glass, pizzas, flatbreads, wonderful place.
Excellent, man. Excellent. Hey, our guests this morning, by the way, coming in after the break, are David Ems, founder of South Coast Repertory, and Paula Tomei, SCR's managing director. All right, let's get started with business this morning, Megan. Maybe we start with a little police blotter.
Today's police blotter.
Oh, sure. You think it's beautiful out there. Safe, serene, Laguna Beach. Littered with crime, littered with cess. So here's just a few things that are going on you may not have known about. Monday, March 10th, an 88-year-old woman noticed an unauthorized airline ticket had been charged to her credit card.
How interesting.
Can you believe that? This is the Genius of the Week award. A man who unfurled his sleeping bag in a parking lot in the middle of the road suffered abrasions when he was run over by a car.
Wow.
That's not a good place to go to bed.
No, it's not.
Not at all. A missing backyard chair was located in the yard of a nearby neighbor and returned to its rightful owner. A youth was admonished to stay out of his neighbor's yard.
Now, did they actually use the word admonished?
They did. They actually did, yes, right here.
How interesting.
Yeah, I thought I made that up.
It's like getting a slap on the hand or, going to your corner or something.
It's kind of like Putin taking over Crimea. I believe he was admonished not to do that.
Perfect
by the United
example.
States. And Merkel was, I heard, miffed at him. That's how far she's willing to go.
Miffed?
Miffed. So there's, I'm pretty sure Putin will be pulling out immediately. He's terrified of these actions.
Right.
And I think that we did not let his vice secretary go to Disneyland this week. So he's very upset about that as well.
These poor are baby.
Punishing, crushing. Speaking of Disneyland, I got this something else here from Disneyland.
Oh.
200 block of Emerald. A resident reported the disappearance of 6 Disneyland passes.
Wow.
She suspected the handyman.
What do you mean the handyman? What's that mean?
You know, like James Taylor probably came by.
Oh, yeah. The handyman. No, yeah. Oh, that's the candyman, wasn't it?
That would be Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, okay.
That's an even worse song. So that's a sample of the hell that's going on around us as we sit here.
I love it. Hey, we also got some About Town stuff going on, do we not?
Of course we do. So let's talk about that. We got some stuff going on.
You hear the rustling of the newspaper in the background, by the way?
I did. And if you're a fan of the Hunger Games, well, you're just going to love Divergent, which is essentially a Hunger Games 2, so to speak. Story about a future world where teenagers live in a post-apocalyptic Chicago where people are herded into various factions based on their skill sets and personalities. And if you're not quite like the rest, you're divergent.
How interesting.
So this is, they think it's going to be as big as Hunger Games.
Huh.
But speaking of big, the biggest news of the day, do you know what today is?
I do.
No. Yes, what is it?
It's National Corn Dog Day.
Yes, it is. It's National Corn Dog Day. And believe it or don't, but for $1, you can get not one, but 2 corn dogs at Wiener Schnitzel. So I encourage you to run by and get yourself.
Where is the nearest Wiener Schnitzel, by the way? I know there's one in Huntington Beach off of Brookhurst. Anybody know?
There's one on Jamboree right around Birch.
Okay, gotcha.
I've stopped there for breakfast many times. If you like interesting theatrical productions that should never have been done, I Love Lucy on Stage is playing. And I hear it's good, but it seems very odd to me. And that's at the Segerstrom Center tonight.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for something to do this afternoon.
I'm always looking for
something
to do.
Always a crowd pleaser. It's the 56th annual Swallows Day Parade.
Oh.
Going on in San Juan Capistrano.
That's great, yeah.
Which is a bit ironic because the Swallows have not come back to Capistrano for years because Mission Hospital is a higher point. The Swallows tend to go up there. But there's guys on horseback and fun and music and all kinds of good stuff.
Well, that's a great community, by the way. And they got the Swallows Inn down there. Isn't that that little restaurant, local restaurant bar down there where they have some good music?
It is indeed.
They have that back road behind the railroad tracks there, which is fun to walk.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Ramos Tavern's back there. It's a wonderful restaurant back there. And if you're a fan of Ansel Adams, the Getty, for the first time in their history, is doing a retrospective on him, spanning 6 decades of his amazing work in black and white photography, starting now. Through July 20th.
I love to watch you read the newspaper. I mean, really, it's really quite.
I learned to do that last week, so I'm just kind of proud of it.
Hey, I should mention, by the way, we have Megan Jamerson engineering the board this morning, of course. Megan?
Good morning.
Good morning. We also have, of course, the film crew, some photographers, Faye Chapman. It's a busy morning here. Megan, you went out and did a special feature for us.
I did. Thursday night, I was in Costa Mesa at a local company's spring launch party of their jewelry line. It's called 31 Bits. And they have a nice cause behind them. It's not just fashion. So that's kind of how it all started.
What is that cause?
They work with women in northern Uganda. The women in Uganda actually make the beads themselves.
They discriminate against southern Ugandan women.
Yeah, exactly. But I explain it all in the feature.
Excellent. So. Wow. Yeah, looking forward to that. Let's hear it.
All right.
I just want this to be like my closet of jewels. Just walk in and be like, hello, necklaces and bracelets. What do I want to wear today?
Kiki Latour of Quicksilver is admiring the assortment of brightly colored baubles that hang neatly in the Costa Mesa storeroom of jewelry company 31 Bits during their spring 2014 party. All around us are necklaces and bracelets made from the 31 Bits signature roundly shaped beads. Each piece is unique in the same way.
I just want this to be like my closet of jewels. Just walk in and be like, hello, necklaces and bracelets. What do I want to wear today?
Kiki Latour of Quicksilver is admiring the assortment of brightly colored baubles that hang neatly in the Costa Mesa storeroom of jewelry company 31 Bits during their spring 2014 launch party. All around us are necklaces and bracelets made from the 31 Bits signature roundly shaped beads. Each piece is unique in the same way that the story of 31 Bits stands apart in the fashion world. Each and every bead is handmade by women in northern Uganda 31 Bits is a story of global cooperation that began with a group of young women at a local college. And like their motto says, it's fashion for good. Six years ago, Kelly Doppel, Ali Swanson, Anna Toy, Brooke Hodges, and Jesse Simonson were undergraduate students at Vanguard University, not quite sure what the future held. Things changed for them when Doppel went on a trip to Uganda and returned with a box of handmade jewelry. The friends recognized that the Ugandan women were making something unique that people in the United States would buy. They began to sell the jewelry at school events, craft fairs, and then would send the money back to the women in Uganda who were struggling in the war-torn country. Realizing the potential, they grew the business and began to incorporate what they call a holistic educational program that teaches the Ugandan women financial independence, physical well-being, and provides social support. At the beginning, there were only 6 Ugandan women. Today, there are 170 involved in the 5-year program. And to the delight of the founders, 31 Bits just had their first class of graduates. Ali Swanson, a founder and PR and marketing coordinator for 31 Bits, is thrilled by the success of the graduates.
They're all starting like successful small businesses. Some of them have started like a salon, or one lady started a piggery, so she like raises pigs and then sells them. Like that in of itself is like the biggest accomplishment, just that they know how to work and how to like be self-sustainable. But even just seeing women, like a lot of our ladies have AIDS and they don't know how to care for themselves. So even just the accomplishment of these women learning what it looks like to like take care of their bodies and how to like fight that and fight the stereotypes that are out there. And I think that even something that's so cool for us is like the 31 Bits compound and where all our women come every day to work has become such a family environment. Women that, you know, were kidnapped by the LRA or that have been through like horrible circumstances and never felt like they had a family or a place that they could belong, now feel like a sense of belonging. That's something that's like so cool for us.
In the packed 31 Bits showroom, every fresh-faced and fashionably savvy Orange Countyan is in attendance to get the first look at the spring launch, and the reaction is unanimous. From first-time buyers to longtime supporters, everyone loves and admires the brand. The evening's entertainment singer Brooke White, former American Idol contestant, says it best.
There's something awesome about what they're doing on a charitable level, but the thing about it is it's really beautiful and it's really wearable and it's really current and fresh. So I think they've just have the perfect combination of things happening here.
In 2014, 31 Bits hopes that customers will become more conscious of where and how their jewelry and clothing are made, and to realize that with the growing number of socially minded brands, what they purchase can go to a good cause. They are also working to expand to another part of the world, hoping to take their development model to a new country and apply it to a new product. And Bali is on the short list.
That's really interesting, Megan. How did you come across this organization?
Well, I actually went to college with Ali Swanson's fiance.
Oh.
So I heard about it through him and sort of started following them.
Right.
And was watching to see if they were going to have any events, and this one came up last week.
And how was the event? You were there and you interviewed these people during the event?
Yeah, I talked to a lot of people, and it was pretty across the board that people were excited about what they were doing,
right?
That there was an actual cause and purpose behind the jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of young college students there, very friendly group.
How'd the jewelry look?
It was beautiful. I mean, they've created something unique. It looks, you know, it's handmade, but really well done. Colors were very spring, you know, turquoise, pink, blues.
Mm-hmm.
It was neat. What they've created something special.
Yeah.
I think. So.
You just kind of want to sashay about town when you put it on, probably.
Kind of, yeah. So statement pieces, but for a cause, I guess.
Cool.
So.
Very nice. Nice report. Thank you for bringing that into the studio. Do we have Max Tech on the phone, by the way, our San Francisco reporter who's going to give us a little bit of his Max Tech moment? Max, are you there?
Yep, I'm here, Scott.
Max, how are you? We miss you down here, of course, but you'll be down over the summer, you had mentioned, yes?
I hope hope so.
Well, I hope so as well, my friend. What do you got for us this week?
Well, I just want to mention this before I get into tech. I had this really interesting dining experience last night at the restaurant called Dining in the Dark.
Uh-huh.
Have you heard about that?
No, but is it what I
have. It was a fundraiser, probably.
Was it a fundraiser?
Yes. And so, what happened was this meal I was in was in absolute darkness, and the waiters were all blind.
Wow. That was interesting.
Did you leave him a tip?
You won't know.
How was the food?
The food was actually really good. I mean, right. Because the first sip of water I had, I was already blown away. Because, like, the water, I was already feeling more, you know?
No, I don't know. What do you mean feeling more? Was it vodka, not water?
I might have been, like, spilling it on me. But it just, everything I was having, that was my sole focus. There was no distraction.
Gotcha.
It was food and a conversation I had. That went, like, the whole night.
Wow.
Very cool.
Yeah, very cool. And that was up in San Francisco, by the way?
Uh-huh.
Oh, great. Well, what do you got in the tech world? What's going on in the tech world?
So Facebook, their Deep Face project, which is one of their facial recognition projects, mm-hmm. has reached a milestone where it can identify a user in a crowd with 97% accuracy.
Oh, that's scary.
Which means in the future, not only your friends will be posting embarrassing pictures of you, but Facebook will already be doing it for you.
You know, what's the legal ramifications of that? I mean, you're an attorney. I feel as though I have the right to my image without Facebook stepping in and taking that right away from me, Robert.
It's a new frontier. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, but there's a certain right of privacy where, you know, we sort of have as we step out in the world, don't you think?
There is indeed. But I'll have to ask my friend Ashley Behringer, who's the general counsel of Facebook, what she thinks about all this next time.
Boy, you have friends in wonderful places. Yeah. That's interesting, Max. What else you got?
So my next story and final story will make our police blotter segment a lot more interesting because police officers in L.A. and soon many other places are now testing out wearable cameras that will film throughout the entire shift.
They don't do that already?
No, those are security cops. If you see them, all cops and stuff.
Uh-huh.
They film, I think you're thinking about maybe the dash cam.
Yeah.
But the police officers themselves will have sunglasses with
cameras. Yeah, they strap it right on their chest or they put it on their helmet.
Oh, wow.
So everything they do will be on camera.
I can see the value in that, certainly, you know, with all the lawsuits and everything going on, don't you?
Exactly right.
Yeah, a little different scenario than Facebook taking public pictures of people, but I like that.
Go ahead.
Sorry. No, please, Max, go ahead.
Oh, I was just thinking this would make the police brought a report of a runaway squirrel resisting arrest a lot more interesting.
Squirrel cam. All right. Hey, Max, thanks for calling in. It's always a delight, man. I get good reports on your presentation. Everybody loves it, so thank you so much. Appreciate you calling in, and we'll chat with you not next week. We're not going to be here next week. We got a rerun of the world's famous art forger, Tony Tetro, but the week after that, we'll be back with David Wilhelm, actually. So, Max, we'll look forward to hearing from you then.
Sweet. Thank
Great
you.
Great job, Max. Thanks.
All right, in the studio, by the way, we also have our healthy... our healthy... I have a slight speech impediment.
I noticed that. It makes you perfect the radio. We should go to Disneyland later.
It's actually words with R, like daiquiri. I have to really focus on R words.
Why are you even saying the word daiquiri? It's troubling.
We have our healthy lifestyle coach, and I'm talking about alcohol. But we have our healthy lifestyle coach, Jill Harvey, who's here to really sort of chat about being proactive in your health and in your healthy lifestyle. Yes, Jill?
Yes, Scott.
And good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, so it's a good day. We're going to get proactive and empowered. And alcohol does have a place.
Really?
Just so you know, yeah.
Can you say daiquiri?
I can say daiquiri. Daiquiri, well.
Excellent.
Yeah, so as we move along in these wellness segments, I think what we need to do is step back and say, look, there's so many options we have. We make choices every day. And in the wellness wheel, we have the segment of nutrition. We have the aspect of exercise, stress management, your mental attitude, and sleep. But all of those need to be addressed with care.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to take a look at our personal accountability to each of those.
Yeah.
You know, if you put weight on, someone was telling me the other day that she can't lose weight after 4 weeks. And I'm like, well, it didn't go on in 4 weeks.
Mm.
Right. And so this is looking ahead, setting long-term goals, not just for a cruise or a school reunion. It's saying, how am I going to feel in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? And really looking at that, because there was a gentleman, Charles Noble, he said, you must have long-range goals to keep you from being frustrated by short-range failure.
Hmm.
And so, you know, because you go on a diet, you lose weight, you gain it. Frustration. So that's my personal motivation. How do I want to feel in 10 years?
Yeah.
And so every day I wake up and I'm excited about that.
I just want to be alive in 10 years.
Yeah. Well, at the pace you're going, then.
Yeah.
Not with all those daiquiris.
Daiquiris. And corn dogs.
Oh, two of them today coming right. up. Fittest centipedes.
You know, it's interesting, though, because, you know, being proactive is probably the first step all of us should take. What would be a bit of advice you could give somebody in terms of that first round of steps to be proactive in their life? What's the first thing I should go out and do today or tomorrow?
Right. So there's a beautiful saying that sitting kills and moving heals.
Nice.
So if you're sitting all day, get up every 15 minutes, every half hour, or move around on the commercials that you're at home, and really take time to say, you know, if I'm eating sugar, can you cut it in half today? Mm-hmm. Right? Your six-pack of beer, Robert?
No, he's not a beer guy.
Oh, no.
No. Are you?
Okay, well, let's pretend.
Six bottles of Johnny Walker.
Okay, that. Let's make it three.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Right. So it's just taking these, setting your computer. If you're sitting at work and you're stressed, have a timer go off that reminds you to sit up tall, take a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because a lot of illnesses and conditions we have now are due to our own hand, our own lifestyle choices. And genetics plays a very small role.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things do happen. But the more we can stack the cards in our favor, the better. So, you know, you look at, like, hypertension, high cholesterol, heart disease. Those things are contributed by what we eat.
Mm-hmm.
So every day, if we're eating something good, it has good consequences, bad, bad consequences. So I love to think of just getting up every day and being empowered that we need to cultivate this healing in ourselves. The other thing they really studied, and it's come out to be really strong, even more than our personal accountability, are the social circles we're in. So our friends, if you hang around friends who like to party
mm-hmm.
and not eat healthy, you're more likely to be that
so
way.
True.
You know, everybody, you said the word party and everybody looked to Robert right away.
I don't know why.
Yeah, so I just really would love to see, you know, it's like when you are taught to brush and floss your teeth.
Right.
And you do this so your gums stay healthy and you don't lose your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing goes with every organ of our body. You can look well on the exterior, but how are your organs running?
Yeah.
So they need attention, every cell, every tissue.
I love the fact, by the way, that you mentioned earlier that it's a lot tougher to take off the weight than it is to put on the weight, you know?
Right.
I mean, we work hard, a lot of us, not necessarily me, but we work hard to try to stay in shape. But you go off for a week or two, and it just seems like you lose so quickly and dramatically.
It's true.
Yeah.
And especially as we get older, unfortunately. So mm-hmm. as we get older, we need to get stronger and mm-hmm. smarter and more focused.
Yeah.
Because if we want to be 60, 70, 80 and healthy and strong, it's on our part,
yeah.
you know, and God willing the rest. And then if you do get something, working in cooperation with your doctor to be proactive on that end as well.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
You've got a voice for radio and a look for TV, young lady. So
oh, my gosh.
Thank you so much for coming
Scott,
in.
Scott, Robert,
thank you so
Megan,
much,
thank
Mel.
You guys
great
very
to
much.
See you.
Have a good day.
Wonderful. Okay, Robert, believe it or not, it's time for Rock Legends. And you should be quite honest and tell us how this next artist came about in our conversation.
Well, you were accusing me of picking only male artists.
Well, you accused me of whining about it, personally.
You whined a lot, I might add. And I mentioned to you that in the world of legends of rock, I couldn't think of too many female artists that fell in that category.
Right.
Now, there are many phenomenal female musicians, singers, and songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think of legends of rock, only one name came to mind with me.
Okay.
And that would be the late, the great Janis Joplin. Janis was born in Port Arthur, Texas, January 19th, 1943. She began as a painter, but soon moved on to playing music. And her instrument of choice? The auto harp, if you can believe it.
Wow.
While she's at the University of Texas, they wrote an article about her called She Dares to Be Different. According to the school newspaper, she goes barefoot when she feels like it, wears Levi's to class because they're comfortable, and carries an auto harp everywhere she goes. She loves to break into song, and her name is Janis Joplin. Well, that little girl from Texas soon grew up and moved to San Francisco and moved to Haight-Ashbury. Unfortunately, she also decided to become a speed freak, a heroin user, and her favorite beverage was Southern Comfort. Mm-hmm. Fearing she was going to die, her friends convinced her to move back to Texas in 1965. But then Big Brother and the Holding Company, a fantastic band out of San Francisco, heard her voice and convinced her to move back to San Francisco, starting a musical career and, unfortunately, a path that led to not so nice of an ending.
Right.
The band's studio album, Big Brother and the Holding Company, was released in 1967. And just like Jimi Hendrix, who she grew up with and died 16 days after, she got her claim to fame at the Monterey Pop Festival. And this was her first song that she played live, Ball and Chain, and it blew away the crowd.
Sitting down by my window.
Oh, truly one of the most distinctive voices you will ever hear.
Looking
at the rain.
The documentary Monterey Pop was filmed. And in it, you can actually see Mama Cass at the end of the song say, wow, that's really heavy.
Hmm.
Well, she moved on and did her next first major studio recording, where she produced almost all the album herself. She was said to be the first to work and the last to leave.
Wow.
Did an album called Cheap Thrills, where they actually started to take off and it became very popular. And their first hit off that was Peace of My Heart.
Love this song.
Then she followed up with another hit, her remix of Summertime.
Summertime, time, time, shine.
No other voice on the planet has ever, will ever sound like
that. A lot of people try to emulate her.
Absolutely. I know I've tried unsuccessfully. The Cheap Thrills made it all the way up to number one on the album Billboard chart. Then on September 14th, 1968, there was word that the band was going to break up. So Bill Graham produced a show up in San Francisco, and guess who opened for Janis Joplin? Chicago Transit Authority, now known as Chicago, and Santana.
Wow.
That's a pretty good opening act. Yeah. So the band did split up, and she therefore formed a new band, the Cosmic Blues Band. She also decided to take up heroin again, and she was doing $200 a day, which from what I understand is a lot of heroin back then. The album went on to be number four and later became gold. This is the cut song, Cosmic Blues.
You know what I mean, man? If you don't know what I mean, you will soon enough. So...
she went on to sing this song and others at Woodstock when she appeared in the late hours of Saturday, August 16th, 1969. Unfortunately, she had a 10-hour delay before they could put her on the stage, so she spent her time wisely, shooting up heroin and getting drunk on her ass. According to her, she was three sheets to the wind. Pete Townsend played right after with The Who, and he commented the following. Well, tonight she wasn't at her best, probably due to the long day and probably maybe because she had so much booze and heroin she consumed. But even when she's bad, she's still good. Well, Janis went on to do her last album, a sensational album, which became her biggest hit, Pearl. And one of her last performances ever was on the Dick Cavett Show, where she actually admitted she was going back to her high school reunion where the school had once called her, quote, the ugliest man on campus.
Oh, that's horrible.
Shit, that was a pretty harsh. So during late August and September, in October of 1970, she began recording this in the new studio. It was not released until after her death and ironically became her biggest-selling album of all time, featuring a couple of smash hits. The first, a remake of Kris Kristofferson's song, who was actually her lover in the summer of 1970, Me and Bobby McGee.
Bobby found a diesel down just before it rained that rode us all the way into New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana, and I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues.
The album had a bit of a pop beat to it. Well, her song Move Over soon became a hit as well. Shortly before her death, she did one last song. She walked in and sang it one time only, one track only. It became one of her most famous and beautiful songs, a social commentary called Mercedes-Benz.
It goes like this.
Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes-Benz? My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends. Worked hard all my lifetime. No help
from my friends. October 4th, 1970, her manager found her dead in her hotel room from drug and alcohol overdose. She actually left in her will $2,500 for her fans to throw a huge party for. Joplin died at 27 and joined the famous club at 27. Jimi Hendrix and many others died at that age. Stevie Nicks said, "The day I saw her, it changed my life." Pink credits her with her being her inspiration. A true legend and a true pioneer. And Janis Joplin.
Beautiful. And a woman, by the way, Robert.
I believe she was.
Yeah, beautiful job. All right, we're going to roll and let this music play out. We're going to be back in 60 seconds with our in-studio guest this morning, David Ems and Paula Tomei from South Coast Repertory. We're back in 60. Megan.
The next round. Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a night on the town? Everybody, oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends. Worked hard all my lifetime. No help from my friends. So, oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? That's it.
That it's over, baby. You say that it's over now, but still you hang around. Now come on, won't you move over? You know that I need a man. You know that I need a man. But when I ask you to, you just tell me that maybe you can.
Welcome back to Radio Caravan. That was Janis Joplin. Hey, we're thrilled to have on our studio today two legends of the theater, David Ems and Paula Tomei. David, along with his partner, Martin Benson, formed South Coast Repertory Theater some 50 years ago. And we just celebrated our 50th anniversary. And as a part of that celebration, the theater was renamed the David M's and Martin Benson Theater Center. It's a remarkable building. It's a remarkable talent. It's a remarkable legacy, winning multiple prizes from all over the world and one of the finest theaters in America. Our guest today, founding director David M's and managing director Paula Tomei. Good morning, you guys.
Good morning.
Great to see you.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, thank you for coming in, by the way. We really appreciate it. So very kind of you. Congratulations, by the way, on the anniversary, 50th anniversary. That must be quite an extraordinary feat, no?
Well, it's quite an amazing odyssey, and it said something about, you know, the Horatio Alger story can still exist, and that you can be a graduate of a California State University and with no particular theater resume. And my colleague Martin and I were naive enough and idealistic enough to say, let's start a theater, let's put on a show. And we grew from a homeless touring company through every phase an organization can grow through until now we are an institution with an endowment and a marvelous theater complex and, most importantly, a lot of productions that we think have added to the fabric of the American theater.
Yeah. You know, I did a little research. 50 years ago, you started in the Newport Beach E-Bell Club, and you moved over to a hardware store, and you sort of progressed from there. I'm curious, though, what exactly was your creative vision back then, and did you ever imagine, and 50 years later, this is what it would turn out to be?
Well, fortunately, in the 60s was the kind of the wave of the professional resident theater was beginning. There was a feeling, I think, in the country that it was important to decentralize the American theater, and there were models about what a professional resident theater could be. Why should people have to go to New York City to see theater? Why can't there be exciting, important productions in their own community done by artists of you know, tremendous capability and talent and like that? So that was the feeling. So we had a model of what it could be. And we knew that we should come to an area, you know, that where there's a franchise open, which was
a cultural wasteland, if you will.
Was it a cultural wasteland back then?
It pretty much was.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say that, but the because after all, my performances at Harbor High School were a beginning of
legendary.
To do that.
Yeah. Legendary.
Harbor High and Orange Coast College.
Wow.
Was what OCC was the kind of resuscitated my academic career, and from there we went on and like that. So we knew that coming to Orange County, there was the growth, there was the California Angels, as they were then called, were coming in. A university campus was being established. We thought, what a liberalizing influence that might be.
Yeah.
And there's a growing audience that by virtue of the fact that Orange County was being developed. And so we had the model. We had that idea that a community, having grown up here, that would have the capability of supporting a professional resident theater, and it just took a lot longer than we thought, but we still had that sort of graduate school zeal and energy that could keep us going.
And the work ethic, yeah.
As I recall, when you first began operating, you were not technically legal in your operating permit in the building you were in.
Well, you didn't know you needed a building permit to change to put a theater in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As I recall, one of the local council members suggested to you that, well, aren't you also teaching young artists? And maybe we can dub you a school. And
well,
that
it
would
was
be
fortunate that, yeah, that we were building this theater
in
Villaway in Newport Beach, and it was an M1 zone. And so the building department looked up and said, well, you can't have a theater in an M1 zone because it's a manufacturing zone. But fortunately, a kind councilman.
You were manufacturing young talent, is what you were doing.
Who remembered me from somewhere in terms of Harbor High or OCC.
Must have been one of those stunning performances that brought the house down.
So he stepped in and tried to give us a hand and went to the city attorney, and the city attorney looked at our then fledgling articles of incorporation, and it said that one of the purposes of theater is to educate. And he goes, well, it's an educational function. A school can exist in any zone.
Yeah.
And so in that case, we got our permit.
There you go. And to this day, education's a huge part of what SER does.
Indeed.
You know, a quick shout out to my dad, by the way, who was a counselor at Newport Harbor High School his entire career. So he's long retired now at 87.
He still
so.
Speaks of you, though.
Yeah.
He recalls your Guys and Doll performance of bringing the house down.
Oh, musicals are David's specialty.
Hey, Paula, you started in the ticket office.
I did.
And so you sort of, you were there to see the rise of this you know, this sort of platform. What was that experience like for you starting in the ticket office and rising up to the position you're in today?
Well, I saw my first play at South Coast Repertory in eighth grade. Huh. I went to T-Winkle. So,
I went to T-Winkle.
See, there it is. And Estancia High School. So I grew up. This was my local. You did? Okay,
yes.
This is unbelievable. Go Eagles.
Exactly. So, I can sing the theme song. Sing it if you want. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, later. No, it was one of those, it was just the local theater. So we all grew up going to that theater. And the idea that when I was in high school, we had a full production department where there were jobs for all of us. And our teacher, Barbara Van Holt, who was exceptional and allowed us to run this mini company, basically, taught us that you could work behind the scenes, too. So when I started working at South Coast Repertory in 1979, which was the year after they opened the current facility, it was like a dream come true because I had grown up here, watched the theater grow, and when I just squatted for a job, any job.
Right.
I graduated from UCI with a degree in economics, but I spent most of my time in fine arts.
Perfect training to run a ticket office.
Yes, well, there you go. So I squatted for this job. I called this office manager every week for like 4 weeks and said, you know, is there anything? And one day she said, you need to come in because we need people to process tickets. We have just, you know, blown through the roof with subscriptions and totally underestimated what we needed. And that's how it started. I went in, they hired me, and I went upstairs.
As David can tell you, Paul is pretty relentless. Once you put your mind to something, you might as well just surrender.
Oh, well, that's nice. I'll take that as a compliment.
It was
Robert.
Meant as a compliment.
Thank you so much. I should mention that Robert is one of our board members, a great board member, a great supporter, artist himself, obviously, but also so much knowledge about just, you know, how to be a board member. So we're pretty lucky both ways.
Thank you. That works. Motorcycle driver.
From a Vespa rider. Well, Vespa rider, you've got the bigger bike, but anyway.
This is an odd question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What was it that you saw in each other that eventually sort of connected between the two of you?
That's a great question. Well, for me,
because I'm looking at David and I'm stumped.
Great. Maybe I should let David.
No, he's a good-looking guy.
No, that's hilarious. Let's see. Well, when I started, obviously, you know, I was working there. I didn't interact that much with David or Martin, for that matter, because I was working in a whole other department, learning from so many great people. And over the years, you know, it just became apparent. I mean, at that point, you know, I was not seeing anybody and then started seeing other people. David was married, so there wasn't really a, you know, a chance to form a relationship until much later in the tenure, if you will, of working at South Coast Rep. And it was just a very natural flow. That's all I can say, because I mean, working in the creative environment like that and also spending so much time on something that you care so deeply about together is a great thing.
Yeah.
And the balance is, you know, a challenge. We have to work at that so that we don't, you know, invade, you know, the workspace with our private lives and vice versa. It's a very, I guess, we work very hard at maintaining the separateness
of
it all.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yep.
You know, David, you and I chatted over the phone a couple of days ago to sort of prep for this interview. And one of the things I definitely wanted to bring up was, you know, an incredible amount of artistic accomplishments. But you also managed to never run a fiscal deficit. And I'm wondering, how did you manage to do that? After 50 years.
Well, of course, in recent years, having Paul as the managing director has helped out considerably. But I think that the virtue of starting young and with no money is that the idea of having a deficit, we didn't have credit cards in those days. How could no one would loan you money. So how could you go into debt?
Right.
So we had the kind of the aesthetic of we literally kept our receipts, the currency from our $2 and $3 tickets, that's what it cost in those days, in a cigar box. And so basically our discipline was that if there was money in the cigar box, you could spend it. And if there wasn't, you better find some other creative ways of doing it. So the discipline of that...
We could use you as President of the United States. We could use some of that thinking right about now.
So what we like to describe ourselves is that we are artistic liberals, but fiscal conservatives.
Yeah, I love
And Paula,
that.
In recent years, of course, has really helped keep that going and the trustees of which we're blessed to have and wonderful audience and donor base helps with their contributions to keep the theater going forward.
Yeah, I've got to believe there are so many highlights of both your careers Is there any one in particular that maybe stands out more than others? I know you had the building, the venue just recently named after you. I'm wondering if there was anything else that maybe stands out in your careers that sort of highlights the experience.
Well, certainly the renaming of the Theater Center was very significant. And I suppose, you know, we'll get, you know, with the national recognition that we got when we won the Tony, it was some years ago now, but it, that really helped kind of put SER fully on the map if it wasn't before. And I think the other thing that is not a singular event, but more of a process of seeing the impact of the commitment that we've made to develop new work and produce new plays, and the how we've sent plays out onto the American theater. Mm-hmm. And I remember very distinctly once going, being in London and walking down a street, and there were theater posters up, and probably about seven of them leading down towards St. Martin's Lane or whatever it was. And one of them said, Helen Mirren in Collected Stories by Donald Margulies, which was the play we premiered. And then further down the line, it said something like, at the Donmar Warehouse, 3 Days of Rain by Richard Greenberg, again, play that we had premiered. And we go, yeah, well, there's some sort of international impact. And it was a feeling that that commitment to new work, all of which comes from the point of view we want to play a leadership role in American theater, but we want our Orange County audiences to see the best of new theater. They don't have to wait for it to come from New York. They can see it here first. So there's a great deal of, I think, satisfaction that I take from that.
You know, the renaming of the building was, I thought, one of the most exquisite gifts I've ever seen of generosity. I believe it was Paul Foligno many years ago. I believe he gave $10 million to have the building named after him. And you often see that, and he's a wonderful man and very generous. I have never in my life seen someone as a tribute and an homage remove their name and essentially say bye-bye $10 million. It's more important that it bear the founders' names. That was really an amazing tribute, I thought. I've never seen a gesture like that before.
You know, I've talked to many colleagues nationally who've followed that and said the same thing. We don't know of anybody who's ever taken their name off of something to honor founders like that or anyone.
Well, Paul is a truly extraordinary man and feels so strongly about the theater and what our mission is. But still, it was an overwhelming gesture.
Now, today we have Mark Masterson and Paul are running the place. Are you hoping to get a restroom named after you at some point in time? Because most of the walls are taken up with
maybe one of the stalls. Okay. Yeah, I'll go for that. Yeah.
Hey, SER is renowned for its extensive new play development program. And I'm curious, what should listeners and viewers know about the Pacific Playwrights Festival? Paula, do you want to answer that question?
Well, first of all, this will be our 17th year.
Right.
And it has become a real destination for new play, not only new play aficionados locally, but nationally. So we have a lot of people coming in, actually scouting work, and frankly movie studios scouting writers.
Really?
There's a lot of writers writing for Hollywood now, which have started in the theater, but you know, that's not the main reason obviously they come to see the good work.
Right.
And so it's growing, it's gained national attention, and it's become ever more important into the development of new work in the national scene, because some of these development programs that used to exist don't exist anymore. So the Pacific Playwrights Festival has continued to grow and gain stature and deepen artistically too.
So what people can do on a weekend, starting on a Friday, they can see 4 stage readings of a play and 3 productions of new work. So an opportunity to see 7 new pieces of important, we think, American theater. So theaters do come from across the country and all the other scouts that Paula mentioned, because it's quite a magnet to see the best. And we like to think that South Coast Repertory has relationships and commissions out and developmental projects with really some of the major playwrights in America.
And in part to support that on the arduous stage, aren't you doing all new works this year?
Yes.
That's amazing. Has that ever been done before?
No, well,
there have been times in the past when our smaller theater has done it, but nothing of the impact of the Argyros this year. It is very significant.
The Argyros, and then we have Rest by Sam Hunter, which is opening April 4th, which is also an SCR commission and a world premiere. So there's six.
Wow.
Yes.
David, you've sort of passed off the day-to-day operations of running SCR about 2011, I believe, mm-hmm. and you missed that role?
Well, there are times, I suppose, you know, when you would like to move forward on something, but you understand that Martin and I both, Martin Benson, my colleague, that it was important that there would be a kind of a sad irony of everything, of all the growth of theater, if we had not provided for a strong transition of leadership going forward. And so we understand that. And it takes a little bit of adjustment from being, the captain of the ship to being a passenger. But I think it's important that Martin and I understand that, and we do. But also we're here as consultants. We get to continue to direct a play each year, so we can still participate in the life of SCR. To kind of enjoy all the good things that you can come, see a play reading, see an opening. And then when there's a fire to be put out, when there's lots of anxiety over some issue, we can go, well, I'm sure Paula and Mark can take care of that.
So you're more of a first mate than just a passenger. You're still pretty active.
Oh, definitely.
Yes, we're on the bridge occasionally.
And, you know, this is sort of an off-the-cuff question here, but what is your relationship like, 50-year relationship like with your partner, Martin Benson? What was that relationship like?
You know, it's really amazing in the American theater that there can be a kind of dual leadership for the time. Mm-hmm. And it's rare that it's happened. But I think there was a real yin and yang between us, that mm-hmm. even in the sense that Martin was really good to oversimplify with tools, and so he could build sets, and I'm not very good at that. And I could think about, you know, marketing and organization and like that. So that was a nice thing. And then perhaps the real key is, as directors, we have had and still do an amazingly similar kind of artistic judgment. If we would see a play or read a play, we'd both kind of say, oh, this is really terrific, or no, this is wanting, or this is over the top, or whatever mm-hmm. thing it is. But each of us kind of had a different kind of interest as director. So on a spectrum of plays that we both liked, he would tend to gravitate on one side and I would gravitate the other. So very rarely were there the clashing of egos over, no, I want to direct that play. No, right. I want to direct that play. I think that's the key to our success of having run it as a partnership.
Scott, let me give you an idea of how close they are as friends.
Yeah.
I specialize in hoof and mouth disease, which you know. So the first time I met them, I went up to Paul and I said, so what's it like working for two gay guys? And she goes, that would be my husband. I was soon online buying love candles from the Yankee Doodle Candles That's Company. Right. Paula loves David.
Paula, you must have noticed a close relationship between the two working partnerships, right? Between the partnership there.
Right. The joke was always really, I'm married to both of them. and I mean that in a good way. Uh-huh. You know, they, yes, it's extraordinary that they work the way they do. And there's been other theaters that tried to, make that happen too, right. and it doesn't work. Yeah. It's a rare relationship. You know, the chemistry's there. Like David said, the artistry's there,
yeah.
and agreement. And it is really wonderful to be able for Mark and me to have them both involved,
yeah.
and to still be there to be able to walk down the hall and ask questions. Say, we're thinking about this. What do you think? That was an incredibly visionary piece of planning,
right.
that not only our board, but David and Martin, who said we have to do this, mm-hmm. Put together, and we're grateful for it. It's a real experiment,
yeah.
and not too many people allow their founders, successors, whatever, to work together like this. Yeah. And so it's so far so good.
What are some of the special challenges facing SCR in the future or in the near future?
You know, we were just talking about this. I mean, clearly audience development, with the nature of audiences aging, and frankly, you know, the old moving on faster than new coming in, you know, we are definitely challenged by the fact that we don't have a large subscriber base, mm-hmm. as large as we used to have when mm-hmm. I first started. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that security of those, not only audiences in the house, but the finance side of that mm-hmm. is is a big difference, and one that we are focusing hard on. Mm-hmm. You know, the lack of arts education in the schools, the fact that, you know, that started to go away 20 years ago now, mm-hmm. is really coming home to roost in a huge way.
Yep.
And we are, you know, to expose students, mm-hmm. to the theater, to let them know it's an option, mm-hmm. is something that we're working on all the time.
I think we're down to about 3 minutes. How do you expose the younger generations to those opportunities? How do you?
Well, one thing we do is what we can do, mm-hmm. at SCR, there's a Theater for Young Audience program that we started 12 years ago. So we're producing 3 fully mounted plays for young audiences, mm-hmm. so that parents and grandparents can bring their kids to the theater, and that I think is being very successful. We have the theater access tickets, where we provide tickets to local high schools to come and supported by corporate contributions to see work. So we're trying to do at least our bit of introducing people to live theater and what that might be.
Going back to your roots, you also have a big development program and training program for young children as well, mm-hmm. as adults.
Right. The conservatory, right. which has over 500 students right now coming weekly to the theater.
What's that program like? Can you kind of define that?
It's creative dramatics for, mm-hmm. Children from age 8 through 18. And, mm-hmm. it really teaches skill sets as much as acting. I mean, I don't think too many of the kids come in and expect to become professional actors. Some do. Mm-hmm. But the training's really about life skills that you can take from learning in the theater, working together, self-confidence building, all those sorts of things, teamwork, mm-hmm. and taking those out into the world.
Yeah. Two last questions, and we'll make it quick. I know we're running out of time. Number one, what can supporters of SCR expect in the future? And if we cannot necessarily talk about specific plays in the near future, but sort of down the road a little bit?
Well, I think, you know, we've certainly talked about work that reflects the community and, mm-hmm. And continues to do that as it always has, as well as I know Mark has a particular interest in international work. You might see some more of that coming in. And new. You'll always see new.
Yeah.
It's the hallmark of what we do and continues to be very important.
That sounds great. Mm-hmm. David, any thoughts on that question before I ask you?
No, I think she covered it well.
Okay.
What do you know?
What a good couple.
That makes a successful marriage, doesn't it?
Wow. Yeah.
So I read somewhere a quote of yours, I believe, that the most famous quote that served as your guiding artistic principle is to thine own self be true. Were you always true, David, to your artistic vision at SCR?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there. If I would go back and one could find some failures or where we kind of lost our way, I suppose. But certainly the idea of belief in the power of theater to be able to transform and enrich lives, and that for us to be able to provide that to our audience in Orange County was an important mission and one that we stayed largely true to. I saw there's a few transgressions, I suppose, once where we tried to, you know, choose a play because we thought it would sell tickets, and it kind of blew up in our face, and we realized
was that your
that
Hello Dolly production?
Close to it. Yeah. And so we realized, wait a minute, no, if we're not doing work that we believe in passionately, let's don't do it. And so things like that have brought us back on course.
Beautiful. Robert, parting words.
Just thank you for all you've done for the community. It's wonderful kind of watching the handoff now from David to Paula and her new partner, Mark, running it. And it must be wonderful for you to know it's in good hands, David.
Indeed.
Thank you both for coming in. Go Sailors. Go Eagles.
Absolutely. Right? All right.
Newport Estancia High School. We're locals. I love that.
Yep.
Hey, you've been listening to KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. This is Radio Caravan. I'm Scott Hayes.
And I'm Robert Palmer. Jump on board.
We're back in 2 weeks, but next week we're going to rerun the Tony Tetro, world's most famous living art forger. So we're looking forward to that, I'm sure. Megan, take us out of here, young lady.
Have a good day.
Send a bomb in the wind that I, all around I felt it, all I could see.